the life of undocumented immigrants on the First Coast in the wake of an immigration and customs enforcement crackdown. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also listen to the audio feed of this program right now on our Facebook page, as just ahead, local immigration advocates fight back against President Trump's immigration and deportation policies. What are your questions and thoughts about this? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's time for the annual Dignity You Wear Undie campaign as they ask the First Coast to drop their drawers. We'll tell you about that. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this hour, local immigration advocates are protesting a new law under the Donald Trump administration that would require local law enforcement officers to perform the functions of immigration officials and arrest the undocumented. This is a fear spreading to cities nationwide after a series of executive orders and memos have been signed looking at President Trump's new crackdown on illegal immigration. What does it all mean for the First Coast and what's happening around this later in the week? Right now, we welcome Crystal Sestanga, Vice President of the Hispanic Democratic Caucus here in Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also joining us in studio, Jacksonville Immigration Attorney Angela Reyes. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about President Trump's crackdown on undocumented immigrants? We want your calls right now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page where this audio is now streaming live. Crystalis, let's start with you. Later in the week, there will be a meeting that the Hispanic Caucus has organized at Cuba Libre to discuss the impact of the president's deportation policies. Let's begin with that. What's happening later this week?
That's right, Melissa. So we are taking this on, and this is something that personally, as somebody who's been involved in local and state politics for some time here in Jacksonville, I've struggled a lot with the fact that these issues, whenever they come up, as Democrats, we're almost scared to stand up for them because we don't want them to be politicized, but we do have, you know, a responsibility here as being involved in the party to create a platform and a space for communities to come in and talk about these issues. Whether you're a Republican, an independent, Libertarian, Democrat, whatever, we want you to come to this meeting, and it's going to be an immigration panel, and we're going to be bringing in the Catholic Charities, World Relief, Lutheran Social Services, and we're hoping for a confirmation from JSO. So we really want to create that space for Jacksonville to come in and talk about this issue and start a conversation.
549-2937, as we discuss President Trump's hardening policies on illegal immigration. Immigration Attorney Andrea Reyes, the president's policies are stirring anxiety in immigrant communities around this country, including right here in Northeast Florida. They're also winning a lot of approval from his constituents and voters who say we need to be stricter when it comes to enforcing our immigration laws. You are well-versed in the law. Explain, if you could, what this crackdown means for the undocumented here in our area.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having us here today. So the you mentioned the 287G program. A lot of people may not be aware of this, but Jacksonville is one of the two counties in the state of Florida that actually participates and has consecutively participated in the 287G.
The 287G program. What is that?
So this is something where law enforcement agencies participate in this ICE program. This is under the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, and it basically allows it delegates federal immigration enforcement functions to local and state police, where they can actually, they're basically deputized by ICE to be able to do ICE's functions in the absence of ICE. So it creates a lot of complications because it while it does have policies in place, leaves a lot of room for individual and subjective interpretation by police officers.
And how does that translate to what's happening on the ground here in Jacksonville?
Well, you know, you have the component of just the simple, basic racial profiling. It creates, a very specific stigma that if you are, on your bicycle, or if you are walking the streets and you happen to look a little bit more brown or more Hispanic than the average person, they can actually ask the individuals for immigration paperwork. Then we're actually we're hearing about these stories on the ground already.
And is that a change from before the president's election?
The 287G program, no, is not. But there has been an addition. There's been a program called Secure Communities and Detainers that has been restarted. The Secure Communities program was something. It's a deportation program that basically partnerships. It's a partnership between federal, state, and local agencies, where they have an integrated database that they share information. So essentially, if an individual is picked up, and JSO, for example, let's go with them. JSO mm-hmm. picks up an individual, and the individual does not have is a foreign national and does not have a social. JSO shares that information with ICE, and then ICE issues what's called an ICE detainer. That detainer puts a hold on the release of that individual for about 48 hours. And so then the ICE can come pick them up. And that can be for jaywalking, that can be for driving without a license, minor infractions, as of course the same thing as, you know, criminal violations. So it allows more sharing of information between ICE and local law enforcement. Now, that program had been rescinded back in November of 2014. And it was discontinued and was replaced with another program called Priorities Enforcement Program. Unfortunately, the executive action that was just recently issued on the 25th of January takes rescinds the Priority Enforcement Program and puts back into place the Secure Communities Program. So that's one big change that we're definitely going to see.
Okay. And among the changes, these coming in a series of memos from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the president is calling for the hiring of 15,000 more agents, the speeding up of deportations, the removal of privacy restrictions for unauthorized immigrants, and forging more deportation-minded partnerships with local law enforcement, as you've been discussing. At the same time, Kristalis, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly is promising there will be no mass deportations. What about that promise? And is what we're seeing here now in our local community just an increase of anxiety among immigrant populations?
Well, what I have gotten, you know, messages from people that I know in the community who have asked me about the increased DUI checkpoints that are happening in predominantly Hispanic and areas and communities where there are more immigrants than others. So that's one of the questions that we'll be asking and talking about on Thursday. There is that fear. It's only natural, and this is not, again, I really want to stress the fact that this is a nonpartisan panel, and it's an issue that, even though, yes, we are affiliated with a certain party, we want to really talk about it on neutral grounds, because this is not an issue that's to be debated and championed for either left or the right. We really want to, we're here concerned we're concerned about the communities in here in Jacksonville, first and foremost. We don't care about political affiliation. And so the concerns are, you know, increased fear because of the rhetoric that's happening nationally. And that's something that's natural, that's if you hear rhetoric that's against your person and or your group, that the only natural reaction will be to say, hey, what's going on, and why is it that are my community, my group of people are being targeted? So yes, there are real fears, not just in this community, but in many communities in Florida, specifically because of our high immigrant population.
All right, let's go to a lot of calls on this right now. 549-2937 to join the show. Where do you stand on this? As President Trump issues a series of memos and executive orders through the Department of Homeland Security, hardening illegal immigration policies and beefing up deportation, how that is impacting the local community, we want to know where you stand and what you think. Let's begin with Benjamin, Intercoastal West area. Hi, Benjamin. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I stand with Mr. Trump. I believe we need to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he's willing to do something. And we should give him that chance. I know a lot of undocumented workers. Here in Jacksonville, there's a lot of them, and they're very good people. But Mr. Trump seems to think that there's some bad people out there who aren't coming through legal means. Most of the illegal workers I know, they came to the United States through legal means, through the airport, and they just happened to stay.
Yeah, thanks, Benjamin. Thanks for that call. Okay, Andrea Reyes, what about that? What about those listening right now who say, look, this president is simply enforcing the law and trying to better secure the border?
Yes, so there, I think there's also a misconception about, you know, how people get deported and what processes there are in place for people to get deported. And to your point, Benjamin, just the previous administration has actually deported the highest amount of undocumented immigrants than any previous administration, including George W. Bush. And the programs that were in place, I previously mentioned the Priority Enforcement Program, excuse me, actually had very specific foundations of who to deport. There was three specific priorities, one being national, you know, a threat to national security, gang-related individuals, recent reentries, anybody with an aggravated felony. The second priority was, you know, if you had one felony or three or more misdemeanors, if you had a DUI, if you had a domestic violence charge, a possession of a firearm, things like that, then you were also a second level priority. And then individuals who had a deportation order, a final order deportation from, I want to say 2014. So there were a lot of directives to help ICE be able to really do their job with the resources that ICE and the Department of Homeland Security had available to them. And the problem with the vast size of this executive order is that it gives a lot of directives. As you stated, Melissa, 15,000 new agents, 10,000 in ICE and 5,000 for CBP. We're just not entirely sure how we're going to be able to really pull these directives into application. So that's why we had a priority enforcement program to really focus ICE's finances and resources into the individuals that were criminal aliens that definitely, you know, had committed dangerous crimes and should not have been here. So I think that's you know, one of the things that people maybe did not understand or comprehend, but there were many more deportations in the last administration than any
under
any
the
before.
Obama administration.
Correct.
Yeah. Then let's go to lots of calls as we discuss President Trump's immigration and deportation policies and their impact here on the First Coast. Chris is in Arlington. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to call and make a couple points. One is I can't stand our current president. I don't agree with any of his policies, much less his stance on immigration in general. But one of your panelists made some comments about the 287G program that are a little incorrect. Jacksonville, JSO's had the 287G program for over 8 years now. There are no patrol officers that are 287G. The 287G program are only correctional officers, and they're only dealing with people that have been arrested for offenses and then going over and checking their backgrounds once they've been brought to the jail. Police officers on the street are not 287G, and they're not asking people for their immigration paperwork and stuff like that. Thank you.
Are you a police officer, Chris?
No, ma'am, but I have a friend involved in the 287G program.
Thanks for that, Andrea Reyes.
Yes, Chris, thank you for calling in. So as an immigration attorney myself, we are getting reports that police officers in Neptune Beach, Jacksonville Beach, JSO, have asked individuals for their actual immigration status.
Have asked for papers?
Yes.
Papers, please.
Yes.
And so what Chris is saying is that under the law, that is not their role, but you're saying you're hearing anecdotal reports of those.
Correct. And so, yes, we are aware that the 287G program has existed. It started with Rutherford, I believe, in 2008. So that, like I stated, that hasn't changed. The Jacksonville is still part of that. The only thing that's really changing right now is the reenactment of the Secure Communities program.
Okay, lots of calls. Let's go to Francisco in St. Augustine. Hi, Francisco. Francisco? All right, go ahead.
Yes, I have a comment about the policy from the president's role. I just wondered, how the president can imagine. I can imagine how the president is putting that love like this. Maybe he's not thinking about how is he creeping about the family. We have illegal family that they've been in this country for over 20 years that for some reason they haven't been able to get their papers, to get their papers. Now they have family, they have kids, they have children that they're born in the United States, they have their rights, they're American citizens. Now they're going to stop their parents and they're going to send them to different countries, Mexico, Salvador, whatever, So what is going to happen to those kids? Now, is that people who've been here over 20 years, maybe they have children 16, 18 years old. But what about the people who've been here like 5 or 6 years, do they have a baby, so 2 or 3 years old baby? Regardless or whatever, they are American citizens and they have rights. So what is going to happen with those babies? What is Mr. Trump planning to do with them? Don't they have a right? Now, let's see these things straight the way it is, I was illegal too. I am a resident now, but I was illegal. We came to this country because there is work here for us. If there was no work here, nobody will come to the country. Nobody will come to the United States. They don't need walls.
What brought you here? What brought you here?
The need, because there was job here and because the need in my country. So I came here to get a better life. And because it was the opportunity, because it was work here. Because if there was no work, if there were no opportunity, nobody comes here.
What's your status now?
My status is a resident.
Where do you work now?
I am retired already.
Oh, okay. All right.
I am retired already. Yes. But see, the plan is this. What I'm thinking is, as long as this work for other countries, for people in other countries that people don't want to do here, like going to the labor, like housekeeping and clean the toilets in the hospitals and things like that, and people don't want to do it, yeah, there will be a positions open for people from other countries to come in here.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I hear your point. Thanks, Francisco. That's Francisco in St. Augustine. And Chris Stellis, here's an email from Lowell saying much the same thing. He writes, illegal immigrants wouldn't be here if businesses weren't willing to break the law by hiring and paying them.
Right. So as we talk about walls, right, what we're trying to do here is really tear down the walls. By, again, creating a space for conversation, for authentic conversation and listening. We want to be proactive. We want to ask questions. We are not saying, being preemptive in our blaming preemptive in our judging of what's happening. But we want to ask, JSO, City of Jacksonville, what's really going on? And these are the policies that are going to be coming down the pipeline. What's going to happen to Jacksonville and what's going to be the effect for Jacksonville?
Is JSO going to participate in your forum Thursday night?
So we are awaiting confirmation from JSO, and we're working on that. We're pretty confident they'll be there. I was part of the JSO Community Engagement Task Force for 6 months, and one of the things that we talked about is, what is the best practice for engaging the community when it comes to programs or initiatives? And really having that conversation, and again, it's not a new idea, but it's something that is not really applied all the way through across the board for many given issues. And so we want to make sure that that's happening and that the recommendations, especially for the Community Engagement Task Force, of consulting with the community before we go ahead and implement and enforce certain policies is seen through.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about local undocumented immigrants as they react with anxiety to President Trump's crackdown and deportation beefing up. Let's go to Kim in Jacksonville now. Hi, Kim. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say you wanted to talk about breaking down walls. And I think one of the ways to do that is to educate people about who we are. When I say we, I'm a Puerto Rican woman here in this city. I'm very disappointed in some of the things I'm hearing in Jacksonville, you know, ripping people off the streets because they're too brown or because we're speaking Spanish in public or things like this. It creates a fear. I don't know how many times I've been asked for my green card when I'm getting a job. I'm Puerto Rican. We're American citizens. But beyond that, you know, there's also the fact that if a law is unjust, then a man is not only right, have the right to disobey it, but he's obligated to do so. That's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. And this is unjust. Everything that's happening, the stereotypes that are being created about us, the fact that Hispanics, Latinos, whatever you want to call us now, we're not the only ones, they're not the only ones that are illegal into this country. They're not all committing crimes. They're not all, you know, lazy bums. They're contributing to this society. They have families here that are Americans. Green cards, people who have green cards are afraid that they're being revoked. I have a relative who has a is living here as a permanent resident, and we're begging her, please become a citizen. These are just some of the things that I think people need to think about when they're thinking about the fact that, okay, just because it's breaking the law, it doesn't mean that it's justified. It doesn't mean that it's okay. And I think that these people should be allowed to stay here. And I think something should be done to make them legal, make them citizens, so that we don't have to have this 1960s fear of being ripped off the streets and sent back to a country that we don't even know about because we're too brown or because we're speaking a different language in public. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Brianna in Brunswick, Georgia. Go ahead, Brianna.
Hi, yes, my opinion on all this Trump immigration, I just honestly feel that if you are not legally here, you should not be here. You're not paying the taxes. You're not, you know, contributing to America, really. And, you know, if you've been here for a long time, if you haven't committed any crimes, I feel you should have, like, a warning as a time frame. Okay, you need to have your legal status by this point. Otherwise, you will be deported. Because, I mean, it is sad that some of these kids are born here in the U.S. and now, you know, their parents are still illegal. But at the same time, that's, you know, that's on them. They should have been legal here in the first place.
All right. Thanks, Brianna. Andrea Reyes, 2 points of view just now on the phone lines.
Yeah. So I first wanted to address Kim. Kim, thank you for calling. And I just wanted to add to the point that, you know, when you look at our community right now, when you look at the individuals that are undocumented, what they contribute, you have, you know, if you were to take away all these undocumented immigrants, you would be affecting the restaurant industry, you'd be affecting the agricultural industry, the manufacturing factory industries, construction, hotels, domestic services. All these things are going to be affected, and we are already seeing the impact of these individuals. We were talking about the fear earlier of individuals walking out into the streets. We are seeing a lower school attendance for children whose
people
parents...
People aren't sending their kids to school.
They're not sending their kids, right? People are not seeking medical attention because, you know, there was a... I don't know if you guys heard on the news, there was a woman that was pulled from a hospital when she was about to undergo surgery. There's a lot of fear, and it's not healthy. It is absolutely not healthy for a community to live, especially a community here in Jacksonville. We have an almost 10% Hispanic population, mm-hmm. and that's, you know.
Yeah, and we don't have as a high a population as, say, South Florida or even Central Florida, but it is a growing population here
increasing.
In our area.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I do want to say one thing just to correct the previous caller, that immigrants actually do pay taxes. A 2016 study by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy estimated that undocumented immigrants pay $11 billion in state and local taxes in 2013. That's equivalent to about 8% of their total income.
And what about the perception that undocumented immigrants aren't contributing to our society? As you just pointed out, the agriculture industry, the restaurant industry, the construction industry are all heavily dependent, often on undocumented immigrants. Undocumented immigrants in part helped build the new Duval County Courthouse, for example. That was a matter of some controversy a few years ago, as I recall. And so there's a lot to discuss here as we talk about the impact and lots of points of view being represented right now on the phones. As we talk about this impact here in Jacksonville, let's take another call. It's Mario on the West Side. Go ahead, Mario.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having this great program. I'm really excited to have something like this available to the community. I think that just because we live in the South, I think a lot of people take for granted that we go along with everything that this government has put in place. And I think that a nice place where a nonpartisan group can get together and talk about what they feel is wonderful. It's a great resource. And I hope it continues, and I hope we have, there's a great turnout at Fuba Libre on Thursday.
Thanks so much, Mario. And that's coming up Thursday night at Cuba Libre. Thanks so much for joining us. Crystal Estanga, she is the vice president of the local Hispanic Democratic Caucus, also in studio, Jacksonville immigration attorney Andrea Reyes. Sorry we couldn't get to every call. This is certainly a hot topic. And ladies, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. A live in-studio performance by 12-year-old virtuoso Jimmy Mosley. Find out about his incredible story. But up next, Dignity You Wear wants you to drop your drawers. That's in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The Florida Museum of Natural History in Gainesville celebrates 100 years as the State Natural History Museum and is now hosting the interactive exhibit Frogs, A Chorus of Colors, featuring live species from around the world, funded in part by Visit Gainesville.
On the next Fresh Air, the connection between bipolar disorder and creativity. We talk with Kay Redfield Jamison, who has written extensively on the subject. Her new book focuses on the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Robert Lowell and the connection between genius and mania in his life. Jamison is also the author of a memoir about her own mood disorder. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Calling all artists, WJCT is celebrating 45 years on the radio, and we need your help to design the perfect anniversary t-shirt. Design should reflect what WJCT means to you or the First Coast community. The winning design will be featured on a limited edition t-shirt during our spring pledge drive. Get started now at wjct.org/45 years.
Jazz, the Great American Songbook, and your favorite oldies on Relax Radio at midnight, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, the head of Jacksonville's own Dignity You Wear wants you to drop your drawers. By way of their annual Undie campaign, of course. It's kicking off tomorrow, and it's a life-altering drive for thousands of people. Executive Director Nicole Brose fills us in. And dropping your drawers, we don't mean that literally, Nicole. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. So Drop Your Drawers, our annual Undie campaign. It's been going on now for years, and we really try to get all of Northeast Florida and beyond excited about collecting brand new wrapped underwear and socks for those in need for our nonprofit agencies.
And that's so important because people might not realize that people that are struggling or homeless,
the most commonly requested item they ask for is underwear and socks.
Yes, and right now we have girls' underwear, and then also just the kids in general is such a huge need. Almost every agency partner requests those things. And so this is just the campaign is to bring awareness for the need in the community, but also to really show everyone we do need support. And the more items we collect, the more we can help.
Now, we're proud to say that the WJCT Community Service Team right here in our building is supporting the Drop Your Drawers Undie campaign all through the month of March. So we are going to be helping collect new fresh-bought underwear and socks to drop off at Dignity You Wear. Anybody can do this. You want to collect 300,000 units. And this is all to fulfill the mission of the founder of Dignity You Wear, Henry Landworth. It's such an incredible story. He was a Holocaust survivor and came to this country after surviving the horrors of the Holocaust and had literally had nothing, not even clothes on his back. And he felt stripped of his dignity. And so his goal is to provide dignity through clothing to people that need it. It's such an incredible effort, and it's been so successful through the years.
Absolutely. So we do work hard at procuring brand new clothing from manufacturers and retailers all over the country. Kids' pants, jeans, women's wear, suits. Even shoes now, mainly kids' sneakers. But the underwear really was the preface of our beginnings. Henry Landworth went into Sulzbacher Center and asked what he could do to help. And one gentleman said, "Sir, do you know what it's like to not have any underwear?" And Henry said, "I do. I've been homeless." And so kind of hence started Dignity. We were founded in 2000. And we've served close to 2 million people, and every month we're serving up to 10,000 plus people in need at our over 200 nonprofit agency partners, close to 70 located right here in Northeast Florida.
So it's easy to drop your drawers and help Nicole. But all you have to do is bring her some underwear and socks. That's what you want everyone to do right now.
Yes, I loved walking into the studio because I saw the box with our flyer. If everyone listening, if you went to our website, which is dignityu, the letter U, wear.org, we have the forms. So you can print them out. You can get your business excited, your church group, your synagogue, your school group, or just friends in the neighborhood. And we can even provide drop-off boxes. So just let us know right on the website. There's all the information. So if you do need a drop-off bin or box, we will provide that. And so really through March through the end of April, we want you to collect those items, also raise much-needed funds. The more support we have, the more we can serve all of our hardworking, wonderful nonprofit agencies.
Just go to dignityyouwear.org, drop your drawers in the annual Undie campaign. It kicks off tomorrow and runs through the end of April. Executive Director Nicole Brose, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Up next, our own travel expert Judy Wells. Travel changes are in the air and on the sea, and she's got a word of caution for you. That's after this.
Bill Owens wants to know why his son died in Yemen. Ryan Owens, a Navy SEAL, is now the first combat death of the Trump administration. The White House called the operation a success. Mr. Owens disagrees. But what is going on in Yemen, and was the operation worth it? I'm Joshua Johnson. A closer look at a forgotten war, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
It's a new administration's first 100 days, and the news is flying fast.
Protesters arrived here.
Keystone XL pipeline.
The Affordable Care Act.
New refugee
Obamacare.
Admissions for
all things considered, will be here to help you make sense of it all. Listen every day.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue. a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's Modern Guide for Adulthood, Part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Travel changes in the air and on the sea mean a word of caution right now. So if you're planning to head out somewhere fun soon, our travel expert Judy Wells has some timely advice for you before you fly or ship out. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. And it all depends on your comfort in the air.
Okay.
These new cheaper flights that they are promoting, American, Delta, and United have them up on their websites now, which means for us eager do-it-yourselfers, beware. What does the lowest mean, these new stripped rates? It means stringent carry-on limits. Under seat size is the most you're going to be able to carry on.
No, like a purse, literally a purse. That's it.
Well, you can get there are
or a tiny little carry on. Yeah.
Tiny little carry on. No assigned seating. Middle seats, anyone?
Right. Sure.
You board last, unless you are one of their primo flyers, in which case you can still board first.
So all the little creature comforts go right.
No,
out
over, and in some flights, no overhead storage.
Uh-huh. And have you experienced this personally,
I have not,
Judy Wells?
I choose not to.
I don't blame you.
There will be no free changes and very limited, if any, redeemable miles awarded. Now, for a short flight, spur of the moment, going to go couch surf with a friend, that's okay.
Sure.
But for anything longer, you don't want it. American begins its stripped-down fares for flights on 10 test routes March the 1st. None of them include Jacksonville, which is good.
Why is that? Oh, you don't want to.
Well, I mean, we don't have to worry about that until all the airlines except for Delta are kind of adding them a little bit at a time to see how they work, if they're worth it. United begins April 18th with test flights to and from Minneapolis-St. Paul. Delta sold them for a while. The thing is, check the fare class of your ticket before completing the purchase. B-class tickets on American are stripped. N-class tickets on United are stripped, and E-class tickets on Delta.
Now, you have all of this at your website.
All at the website, yes.
Which is wellsworld.net.
.net.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is very important information because travel season is, I mean, people are going places right now, and in the summer they're going to be planning getaways to cool off. But you just got back from a really fun event up on Jekyll Island, Whiskey, Wine, and Wildlife.
Yes.
And I'm sure you were the star.
Or W3.
I'm sure you were the star of the show, as always.
I doubt it. But it was a great time. I've been to a lot of food festivals in my life, and this is one of the best. That was his second year this year. So it's small enough that it's accessible. The vendors pull out all the stops. They bring, it's not one of these where there's one bottle of good stuff and the rest is, you know, just rot guts you could buy anywhere. They bring out the good stuff. The chefs knock themselves.
The good whiskey, yeah.
Yeah, and wine. The chefs knock themselves out to compete with one another, which was great fun. And there are people from the Turtle Center carrying around turtles and snakes and, you know, all sorts of little wildlife for you to play with if you want and hold, and little baby alligators. And people up north just think this is, in the north, think this is just the most unusual thing they've ever seen.
Sure, yeah.
But it was great fun. My suggestion is it's going to outgrow itself because of the reputation it's getting. And I would say go in the next couple of years. Come December or January, check their website, which is on my website. Check the dates, start making plans, and my advice is get the VIP tickets. It looks like a lot, but it gives you access to everything. Also, spring for one of the special dinners. It starts on Thursday with a wine. It started on Thursday with a wine dinner. Climax on Saturday with a whiskey dinner. And I thought, oh God, whiskey pairings for dinner? It was wonderful. Really was.
Now, where are you headed next?
I'm headed next to the Atlanta area, Roswell, and then Sarandi, southwest of
Atlanta. See, I figured you were going to say something
like
Iceland.
And then I'm going to Hawaii.
See, that now that is more like a Judy Wells type trip.
Now, another thing to consider these days, Princess is rolling out Medallion Class, and they're promoting it as your personal 24-hour, 7-day-a-week concierge afloat. And it sounds great. It's going to start November of this year. In 2018, Royal Princess gets the medallion. In January 2018, and Caribbean Princess, March 18. This is on Regal Princess. And what it means is that you use it to open the door automatically opens when you come up. You use it for ID cards to get off on and off the ship, for purchases. You don't need your wallet, don't need anything. Next time you order your favorite beverage once, and the next time you want to drink, staffers who will know you by name can deliver your usual immediately wherever you are on the ship. It also allows passengers to locate friends and family wherever on the ship they may be, which is a true convenience on a 19-deck floating city. Convenient, yes, but have you ever wondered how those ads that you've looked at once pop up on your computer screen? That process is called scraping, and everything else your fingers access into a portfolio of interest that can probably and will pop up endlessly. This is the same technology that is used for Medallion. Now, it's wonderful on the cruise. Great while you're on board. But what's going to happen to that information after the cruise? Good question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Keep that in mind and go to Judy's website, wellsworld.net.
Yes.
Because she is the travel expert and our contributor on this show. Always good to talk to you. Have fun in Hawaii.
Oh, thank you. I've never been, and I'm so excited.
You've never been?
Never been. This is, and then I've got a new trip coming up to Greenland.
Now, another Judy Wells type trip.
I have accused things of being the middle of nowhere. This is the middle of nowhere.
I can't wait to hear about that.
I can't wait to do it.
In a moment, violin virtuoso Jimmy Mosley. That's next.
Is a simple truth. Manufacturing today needs different kinds of workers than it used to.
Without them being highly skilled, they will go out of business. That's what's different about advanced manufacturing. You cannot be successful unless you have highly skilled employees.
I'm Kai Risdahl, a changing workforce for changing times, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There are a million things that are not supposed to happen. Anvils are not supposed to fall from the sky. You're not supposed to find the secret plans in the laundry basket. But what if the stuff that's not supposed to happen happens? The Next Snap Judgment, one in a million. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's the hope of every young aspiring musician to be discovered. Like kind of happened for La Villa School of the Arts student Jimmy Mosley. He was playing his violin on the streets in Five Points when multi-platinum musician and humanitarian Michael Franti heard the young virtuoso, and he invited Mosley to play with him on stage during his recent concert at Mavericks at the Jacksonville Landing. What a thrill. Jimmy Mosley joins us now with more about this once-in-a-lifetime moment. We're going to hear him play in a few minutes as well. Hey, Jimmy, good morning.
Hello.
Also with us, Kristen Mosley, Jimmy's mom. She's also a Duval County Public School teacher. Good to see you.
Hi, thank you.
And Mark Lowry, president of the meet-and-greet sponsor Jack's Refrigeration and Jack's Cares. Good to see you.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for being here, everyone. Okay, so, Jimmy, you're a student at La Villa School of the Arts. You were playing your violin out on the street in Five Points when Michael Franti walked by and heard you playing. Is that right?
Well, I finished playing at Five Points, and we went inside the restaurant to eat dinner, and he was performing. So I went up to get my violin signed, and he asked me if I played that. I answered yes, and he said, well, then come on up on stage.
And so he just had you come up and play and perform with him. What was that like?
It was exciting, and it was very nerve-wracking.
You were nervous?
Yeah, because I didn't know the song, so I just tried to get by.
Yeah, but I'm sure you did beautifully. I'm sure he was thrilled, too.
I couldn't even hear myself.
Now, people that might not know about Michael Franti, he's a hip-hop artist, musician, spoken word artist. He tries to use his music to support different social justice causes. He's known for going barefoot all the time. That might ring a bell with some people. Really interesting guy. So, Kristen, Jimmy's mom, what was this experience like for your son, do you think?
Well, it's certainly an experience he'll never forget. We have been big Michael Franti fans for a long time, so our sons, both of our sons, knew his music. And so when he came in and we heard that he was playing, we were so excited. We were like, oh my gosh, go get your violin signed, Jimmy, never expecting in a million years that he would actually ask Jimmy to get up and play. And I do have to say that Jimmy would never have the courage and the skill to be able to get up and play with somebody like that if he did not attend one of these School of the Arts we have here in Jacksonville.
Now, Mark Lowry, with Jack's Refrigeration, Jack's Cares, this was a fundraiser, by the way. Let's talk about this event.
Right. So in the week before Michael was headed to Jacksonville, we had talked to his people and mainly his wife, Sarah, who started the foundation. It's Do It for the Love. The foundation provides wish grants for terminally ill, wounded warriors, and allows them to kind of go out and see their favorite artists. So it's a cause that we've been behind since 2013, since they first started. And it's always a thrill to see Michael do things impromptu. And this event with Jimmy was really nice. And Hoptinger was having their grand opening, so everything really came together in the last minute.
Raised over $6,000.
Right, in a 10-15 minute impromptu concert.
And we're going to get one right now. Now, Jimmy, why don't you come back up to the microphone? You've been playing, by the way, for what, about 6 years?
Yes.
And what do you hope to do with the violin?
Well, I hope to get, like, a scholarship for college.
I think Mom hopes that, too.
Yes, please.
I know the feeling.
Any college recruiters out there, please feel free to call.
Okay, well, we're so excited because you're going to perform for us right now live in studio. What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to do classical bluegrass mashup, and I'm going to start off with a bluegrass tune called Old Joe Clark and end with a Beethoven or Bach piece.
Wow. Okay, here he is, Jimmy Mosley with the La Villa School of the Arts. So impressed, and I'm so grateful that you could be here today to perform for us. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and best of luck.
Thank you.
And, you know, we also need to point out that this is a family tradition. Kristen, you're also a performer on the mandolin.
I play the mandolin, yes.
That's right.
I don't perform now. My father also plays in a little Irish band in town called Ashling Grove. He plays with a group called the Old Time Jam, a lot of bluegrass and old time music. So that's where Jimmy gets a lot of this from.
Yeah, well, he's such a talent, and we wish him the best. What a fun story.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mark Lowry, also with us, president of Jack's Refrigeration and Jack's Tax Cares. Thanks for joining us, too.
Thank you.
All right. I don't know. Is there another song you could play for us to close out the show?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't you do that? And thanks so much. Jimmy Mosley, his mom, Christian, Mark Lowry here, and that is our program. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9, and here's a little more music.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.